Mike Wilner joins us on the line right now. You know him as the host of Blue Jays Baseball here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. He was down at the GM meetings in Boca Raton. Hello, Michael.
Hello.
So, yeah, let's start with the Kevin Pillar thing yesterday. It's cool whenever an athlete is interested in what you're talking about on Twitter. It can get a little awkward, I guess, if you're talking about and let's set the scene, I guess. You were just talking general baseball on Twitter and talking about leadoff options for the Blue Jays next year, and somebody suggested Kevin Pillar, and you said there are better options at leadoff. Is not the best hitter. You don't want that type of hitter getting the most at-bats in a baseball game. And Kevin Pillar, right?
What I said was he's not one of the Blue Jays' best hitters.
Yeah. Which, right. I mean, that's hard to argue. And I believe it was sub-tweeted, right? Like, his handle was not in the tweet, was it not?
No, it was not.
Yeah. He found
it. He's in Hawaii. He's on vacation. He was checking out his Twitter.
Yeah. So he found it and said he respectfully disagreed, checked the numbers, and you guys went back and forth. And then, of course, you know, everybody wants to be Kevin Pillar's best buddy, so you had a lot of people defending him rudely. But I think, you know, arguments like that are fun. They can be constructive as long as, yeah, like Kevin said, you respectfully disagree. Unfortunately, there are morons on planet Earth.
Look, you want Kevin Pillar to think that he's one of the best hitters on the Blue Jays. And that's great that he does. And he's a very good hitter. He's been a very good hitter throughout the course of his minor league career. He had a solid first full season in the major leagues. He's not one of the best hitters on the team. He knows he's not one of the best hitters on the team. And we had a bit of a discussion. I think there was like two tweets each back and forth before it just got so stupid from everybody else.
Yeah.
That I not only did I abandon the conversation, but Pillar wound up tweeting back to tell everybody just to calm the hell down.
Yeah.
Which was nice of him, I guess, but it shouldn't have been necessary. But we could have gotten really into something about lineup construction because, you know, when he said that he disagrees with my opinion that he's not one of the best hitters on the team, my answer to him was, well, I would put Bautista and Encarnacion and Tulowitzki and Donaldson ahead of you, and I don't think you disagree. He answered that by saying, yeah, but do you want those guys leading off or driving me in?
Right.
And we could have gotten into a really, really cool conversation about that, but obviously the Twitter morons prevented that from happening.
Yeah, I mean, you could have just ignored the other conversations that were taking place.
I'm not going to keep it going, though, if I'm dealing with all that stuff that was coming back. And, you know, if anyone wants to check my mentions from last night, it got pretty awful pretty quickly. I'm just not interested in that.
Yeah, you know what you can do, though, in looking back, is you're verified, right? On Twitter?
As I know, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and Kevin Pillar is verified. What you could have done is switch your notifications to only see the verified people so that you don't have the trolls and the psychopaths entering your timeline.
Yeah, but the trolls and the psychopaths are... And I don't think they're psychopaths.
I think some of them might be psychopaths.
I think they're people who become very, very brave when they know that there's no way for anyone to find out who they actually are, A. And two, like you said off the top, people who want Kevin Pillar to tweet them back and say, hey, thanks for sticking up for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, pretend that they're friends with Kevin Pillar for a while. But it's just too much. So, you know, what I could have done was text Kevin and continue the conversation that way. But, I mean, he's in Hawaii. I don't want to bother with that. It's unfortunate because it could have been a really interesting back and forth, and instead it just became embarrassing for me just to see what people were writing. So, that's why we can't have nice things.
I guess. I still feel like there is a way, and maybe it just is ignoring anybody with anything negative to say. I mean, you talked about the block button getting a bit of a workout for you yesterday. I'm in mute mode now. Mute is so much better, Mike. You got to go with the mute.
I have gone back and forth between the mute and the block. Last night I felt people earned blocks.
Yeah,
they weren't doing.
But they like that though.
I know that there's a community of people who want to get blocked by me and who wear that as kind of a badge of pride, which is just another whole level of dementia and insanity. But I didn't feel like that was what I was seeing yesterday. I mean, that was just people being people I don't want to have to deal with. So we did a lot of blocking yesterday. Again, it's really too bad. And I know you think, well, maybe you just ignore them, but I don't want to feed that. I don't want to keep a conversation going that's going to generate dozens of
everything
and horrifying comments.
Every conversation's going to generate that, though, Mike.
Yeah, no, not so much.
Either way, it was fun for about a split second. So that was we'll always have that split second, Mike.
Yes, we always will.
But in the overall, I was really impressed with Kevin Pillar offensively. There was early in the season, there was a point where I thought when he was, I think he was dead last in OPS among qualified players in all of Major League Baseball. I thought there was a time that, okay, the course had run for Kevin Pillar as a starter, even with the incredible defense. You can't have that much of a black hole in your lineup. But he figured it out. And you know what? A lot of it was hard work. As I was out there at the ballpark and the limited amount I saw, and he was out there taking extra BP with Josh Donaldson, it seemed like he really figured some things out. He is what he is. He's never going to be a guy that gets on base a ton. He's going to build his OPS seemingly on a high batting average, high enough.
And lots of doubles.
Sure.
But double-digit homers. Look, he's been an excellent hitter throughout the course of his professional career. And this year, he had a big dip in May, and he had a big dip in August. And other than that, he was terrific.
Mm-hmm.
And he was really good in the playoffs, too. So I think Kevin Pillar can be someone who you don't have to make the argument for that his glove is good enough that you can keep him in the lineup. I think he can be a productive major league hitter. On this team, I think it's bottom of the lineup style.
Oh, definitely.
Just because of whoever else is in there. But after 2016, if Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion are gone and you're building the middle of your lineup with Troy Tulowitzki and Josh Donaldson and Devin Travis, then Kevin Pillar becomes a more important piece.
Yeah, and you'd hope maybe you can take a few more walks. Like if he doubled his walk total.
He's got a better walk rate than Sheepier and Sevilla did.
Okay, come on. We're talking about the bottom of the barrel when it comes to walk rates, though.
Yes, we are. But this is a guy whose on-base is always going to be driven by his batting average.
Yeah, but there are guys who figure it out with the walks at a certain point in their careers. They realize, hey, it's not the minor leagues. I'm not going to get a mistake every at-bat. I can't just hit everything. I've got to take what I can get, and getting on base with a walk is actually a pretty valuable tool. There are guys that figure that out at the major league level.
There aren't many.
Yeah, maybe he's one. Maybe he's one. Because I mean, if you hit 278, and if he was a 314 on base, but if that's like 330, 340, then now you're cooking. Now you got something.
Yeah, but if he hits 295, then it's a 340 on base.
Sure. Either way, talking to Mike Wilner. All right, so the news of the offseason so far, Marco Estrada with the two-year deal, and now there's differing opinions as to whether he might have been able to get more than that somewhere else. 2 years, $26 million. He was the Blue Jays were already going to be on the hook for $15.8 million over 1 year if he accepted the qualifying offer, which we finally got people accepting, which makes sense.
Three of them.
Yeah.
Should have been four.
Right. Ian Kennedy, I assume you think is the fourth, right?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. But although I've seen some tweets about how his second half, he was really unlucky and the XFIP was actually real good and the strikeout rate, but whatever.
That's fine. Maybe that's true. And if one team says, okay, I'll give you a multi-year deal and give up a draft pick, then good for him.
Well, on the Estrada thing, he did what I think I would have done in that, okay, maybe if you play your cards absolutely perfectly and you catch the one team holding the bag at the end of the free agent dance where David Price and Zach Greinke and everybody's is gone and they need somebody right away, maybe you can maximize your value even more to a 3 or 4 year deal worth a little bit more, but maybe not. Maybe it is a Steven Drew type situation. And, you know, I don't know, what's the difference? 26, 40 million. I guess it's 14 million, but I don't know. I would have taken the 26.
Well, I think that he really, really went out and looked and had his agent study the market hard, and that's why he waited until Friday to make the deal. He took that week and saw who's going to be interested in me if I have a draft pick attached, and what are the offers going to be. And obviously he didn't find anything that he thought was firm enough or attractive enough to take his chances on a longer-term deal.
But desperation,
desperation, that's what I would have done.
Desperation makes teams do interesting things, Mike. Don't you think? If
it's tough to hang your hat on desperation.
Oh, I agree, but I kind of think it's 50-50 that he could have gotten something better if he waited.
How much better? And 50-50 is not exactly good odds.
Yeah, I'm with you. I would have, like I said, I would have done exactly what Marco Estrada did. He got more than the almost $16 million over 1 year, got $10 million more, in fact, over 2 years, and a place where he's pretty comfortable, although he will, in all likelihood, not have Deonner Navarro to throw to next year. So here's...
It's interesting, too, because it's a place where he is comfortable, but it's an ill-suited place for him.
Yeah,
and,
I know.
You know, Rogers Center is not a good ballpark for Marco Estrada, and yet he... played it like a fiddle, if you will, last year, and one wonders if that's going to be able to keep up. But they don't need Marco Estrada to repeat his season. They just need him to be good, solid, like he's been for most of his career, and I think he can do that.
You know who's another guy who I'm kind of surprised didn't accept the qualifying offer was Jeff Samardzija, considering the free agent class next year and how bad he was at that ballpark. I guess it's a situation where he was like, I don't care. I got to take less to get the hell out of Citizens Bank. Or not Citizens Bank. Is it Citizens Bank? No, that's Philly.
That's Philly. He's at the Cell.
U.S. Cellular Field. Yeah. New Comerica. He's got to get the hell out of there, and it doesn't...
New Comiskey.
What did I say? New Comerica. Yeah, New Comiskey. Yeah. I guess it's a situation where he's just got to get out of that ballpark.
I don't know. It's a situation where he's, you know, I'm a little surprised, too, because I think that the goal for Jeff Samardzija is a one-year rebuild your value kind of deal.
Yeah.
To go out back into the market next year and get that huge money if he has a big year. And I don't think that he'll get a one-year rebuild your value deal that'll pay him more than $16 million. So maybe it was. Maybe it's just a bad situation that he didn't want to be there anymore. Or maybe he thinks he can still get a long-term, big, huge, expensive contract.
So here's the way I see it. I don't know if you see it any differently. I'm not sure how you could. Blue Jays have three for sures in the rotation: Dickey, Stroman, and now Estrada. A couple of, maybe, could be. But you're depleting your bullpen in Aaron Sanchez and Roberto Osuna, and one total wild card in Drew Hutchison, although I'm not by any means ruling out the possibility of a big bounce back from Hutchison, because we've seen it previously, not so much last year, although we did even see it in starts and late in the season last year for Drew Hutchison. So that leaves at least two rotation spots if you don't think Sanchez or Osuna are entering the rotation. And the more I read the tea leaves, it seems like the Blue Jays would be pretty happy in just leaving them in their roles right now. Part of that would be not depleting a bullpen that would need a lot of overhauling if those guys were in the rotation. But part of it is also innings. I mean, how many innings are either guy going to be able to throw next year? Am I reading that incorrectly?
No, I think you're reading it right. And that's the same read that I have. They would much rather keep Sanchez and Osuna both in the bullpen next year. They're a little worried about Sanchez's durability after he got that oblique thing in June when he was starting. It's too bad because then he had turned into he was the best starter on the team at the time. So that would have been great, and I think that it may be a bigger red flag to them than it deserves to be.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a red flag to them, and Osuna, asking him to be a full-time starter is a big ask. I mean, he's never pitch more than, what, 80 innings ever.
Yeah.
So you'd have to really gradually work him up, and he thrived so much in the back of that bullpen. For me, I think if you can go out and bring in two more starting pitchers, then you're very, very well served with the two of them in the back of the pen with Brett Cecil.
I guess Marco Estrada is technically like their biggest free agent pitcher signing ever?
No, AJ Burnett would be.
Oh,
that.
Right. And what did he get? 88? No, 60.
555.
Yeah, 555.
Pardon me, but yeah, they haven't signed a starting pitcher to a multi-year deal since they signed AJ Burnett.
Yeah, so that's the first since then.
Almost a decade.
Do they go out and do it again?
If they find the right guy, sure.
Who's the right guy?
Why not? I mean, it depends. I think it depends overall on what they want to do. How sustainable do they think this is, and are they looking beyond 2016? We don't know. We don't know what Rogers' plan is. We don't know what Mark Shapiro wants to do. We do know that they want to win in 2016. Beyond 2016, don't know. So it'll be very interesting to see who they go after and what kind of term they offer to see how long they think they're going to be in this window.
I keep looking at it and wondering how you go about getting those arms that this team is going to need so badly. And I keep going back to the well of pitching or of prospects of giving up more prospect capital. And I know Mark Shapiro, he wants to do both things. He wants to win and replenish the minor league system. I don't know if you can do both things, Mike. And unless you're taking off your major league roster, which they apparently don't want to do, and why would they want to do? This is the best offense in baseball. Why break it up if you don't have to? And when are you going to be counting on your minor leaguers to make an impact at the major league level? Well, you hope not for a number of years. And the majority of your offense is locked up. I don't know. Are those minor league prospects the best way to work a deal to go out and get those arms that you need?
I think they are. I don't know if Mark Shapiro feels the same way. I'm what worries me, and I don't know if this is a worry with a legitimate foundation or not, is that some people can get too caught up in having a great farm system.
Yeah.
And having a great farm system is awesome. Mm-hmm. But the reason to have a great farm system is to feed a great major league team. You want, like, the goal, it feels like sometimes there are certain organizations that lose sight of that goal, that they're so intent on development and being a great factory and having a ton of terrific young players on their way up, that they forget that this is all about winning at the major league level. And the reason that you want to have a great farm is that so you can continue to keep your great major league team great. So I don't worry about replenishing the farm. I think that takes care of itself. I think one of the
just draft well.
Right, draft well. But it's hard to do too, right? If you get three big leaguers out of a draft of 40 players, you've had an unbelievable draft.
Yeah, so just do that.
You know, the dumbest thing that's happened in Major League Baseball this century was what the Phillies did when they retraded for Cliff Lee. Mm-hmm. They traded for Roy Halladay, and then they traded Cliff Lee right away because they said, oh, well, we have to replenish our farm system, which was just so monumentally stupid. You're trying to win. Why are you doing that? And then a few months later, they trade better prospects than they got back to get Cliff Lee back.
Yeah.
And it was because of that short-sightedness. So, look, you look at what the Blue Jays have right now. You've got Marcus Stroman for 5 years. You've got Sanchez for 5 years. You've got Osuna for 5 years. You've got Hutchison for three. You've got Estrada for two. Russell Martin's here for another four. Josh Donaldson's here for another three. Devin Travis for another five.
Tulo
for another four. Pilar for another four. There are a lot of guys who are going to be here for a while, and you have all that time to restock your farm system and get players in that on that conveyor belt to be up in the major leagues when these guys are gone. There's no rush. There really isn't. And so to worry now about 2021, I mean, it just seems counterintuitive.
Yep, I'm with you. And, I don't know. Unless, I mean, the ideal scenario, I mean, and if you're playing with Monopoly money, the ideal scenario is you don't give up any of your young players and you just use cash and you go out and you get a Jordan Zimmermann and maybe somebody else and a Mike Leake and you fill the holes that way. And then
But you're giving up draft picks if you do that. So
sure.
It's not dissimilar to giving up your young players.
Yeah, it's a little different.
Well, it's the same thing.
Well, no, but you
just have a better idea of what you're giving up now.
Yeah, exactly. You have a better idea. You have one, I mean, depending on how advanced the prospect is, you're advancing the a player that's drafted is probably at best 4 years away from the major leagues, where a prospect could be maybe 2 or 3 years away as well.
Yeah, maybe, but again, you never know. I mean, you really know. There's so many of these can't-miss prospects miss, and they do it all the time. So for me, you're giving up a first-round draft pick, that may be worse than giving up one of these guys who've been in your system for a couple of years already.
And who are, like, even Connor Green's not a first-round pick. You know, like, the best prospects in this Blue Jays system are not top picks. Is Sean Reed Foley, is he a top pick?
Yeah, I think he was a first pick.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe.
And Marcus Stroman was.
Yeah, Stroman was. Pompey was not.
A lot of their
Pilar was the 32nd round pick.
A lot of their better young players also are international signings.
Yep.
Like a guy like Vladdy Jr. Could be a big part of this team's future going forward. I bet you he has a lot of value out there if he were to be traded. I don't know if the Blue Jays are real intent on trading away a 17-year-old, but
no, you can't trade him till July anyway. But I mean, you could always put him in as a player to be named in the deal.
Right. Okay. So I mentioned Zimmermann. I don't think the Blue Jays are going to be in on, well, maybe they will be, you know, just as a feeler or as an act of goodwill to be in on David Price and Zach Greinke. I'd say the odds of them landing either of those guys is what, under 1%. Let's start with that. Do you disagree with that?
No, I think you're right.
Okay. Is Jordan Zimmermann a guy he's been of an ace caliber before? This year was a bit of a step back, gave up a lot of hits this year. Didn't walk as many people, but gave up a lot of hits and a lot of home runs, especially in that ballpark in Washington, but still had an ERA of about 3.5, and the peripherals are not rancid, but he's still a guy I guess is going to get a 5-year deal and maybe $20 million per. Is he a guy you want to break the bank on?
No. I like Jordan Zimmermann a lot. But I think he's going to command still, you know, he's the consolation prize, right?
Right.
He's the guy, if you don't get Price or Greinke, that you're going to want. So I think that may still wind up being a little too rich for the Blue Jays' blood to get in on a Jordan Zimmermann. You don't want to get in a bidding war. You really don't. There's not that much difference between a lot of guys. And with this offense and with this defense, you don't have to be great. So if I'm the Blue Jays, I'm not terribly interested in getting into a big bidding war. But if they do sign Zimmermann for 5 years and $110 million, then it's a clear indication that they believe their competitive window is going to be open for a long time.
Which, I mean, I find that hard to believe that they don't believe that.
You know what? I think that this is a team that's set up to be very, very good for the rest of this decade at the very least. But again, we don't know what upstairs is thinking for payroll going forward. We don't know what Mark Shapiro is thinking. I mean, he had a very good team that he tore down and rebuilt, but he was doing it with a much, much, much smaller budget, so he may not have to do this here.
Yeah, the payroll thing is an interesting one because projections now with arbitration totals and everything about $111 million, and if they're in the ballpark of what they were last year, it leaves about $20 million to play with. Which seems like a lot, doesn't it, Mike?
Yeah, but it's not a lot. Seems like a lot, but it's not a lot. You have to build a bullpen. You got to bring in 2 starting pitchers. It's you know, if you want Jordan Zimmermann, there's all your money right there.
Right. What about a guy like Aroldis Chapman? Does that tickle your fancy?
he's fantastic. And depending on what the Reds would want back, and I'm very interested to see how sell-off-y this Reds sell-off is going to be.
Seems pretty sell-off-y.
Yeah, if it is. I mean, Joey Votto's a guy who tickles my fancy quite a bit, too.
There goes all your money.
Well, not necessarily. I think that the Reds might, you know, if they're motivated sellers, they would pick up some of that dough.
Why? He's worth the money.
Yeah, he's worth the money, but if you're motivated to move him, you may have to eat some of it.
Yeah, Joey Votto. I mean, we were talking about Chris Davis being a nice move to bring in a lefty bat, play first base. I mean, Joey Votto, that would be
ridiculous.
I mean, that the guy did not have an infield pop-up a couple of years ago.
Yeah, and I think last year he only fouled one ball out of play.
That's insane.
He's silly.
He's ridiculous. He only hit .314 with a .459 on base, Mike. That's .459. Yeah.
No one in the major leagues is better at not getting out than Joey Votto.
He's rather good, and that would be. I wonder what they'd have to give up to get him. That's pie in the sky stuff, though, don't you think?
I don't know. I would certainly investigate the hell out of it if I were them.
Well, it goes down a line of thinking that we saw Alex Anthopoulos go down, whereas I know the need was pretty obvious that the Blue Jays needed starting pitching at the non-waiver trade deadline, and then he goes out and makes the Tulo deal. And I think it was understated how much that helped the pitching with the defense he played.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we're all looking at the holes that need filling in this pitching staff. Would it be kind of Alex Anthopoulos-y to go out and address the offense right now?
Well, it would be smart. If you could, anytime you can bring in one of the best players in the game, it's smart. It's not necessarily Alex Anthopoulos-y, who's a smart guy, but Tony LaCava is a smart guy. Mark Shapiro is a smart guy. If you can do it, it's just a matter of considering the possibility and being open to it. And I think that they're open to all kinds of things, so one hopes that they're certainly going to explore that. Because, again, you're right. It would be, oh, but they need pitching. Why didn't they get pitching?
Yeah.
Well, hello. Joseph J. Votto.
So we've already seen some movement in the American League East as the Red Sox go out and get Craig Kimbrell yesterday. And apparently the return for the Padres is pretty good in reading up on some of the prospects. But, again, they're just prospects, and who knows if any of them make it. But you never know. Could end up being a deal the Red Sox regret in years after this. But they have a lot of young players already, and a lot of young players making impacts at the major league level to the Red Sox. They were already a much better team second half of the year, Mike, and we saw that with the way they played the Blue Jays in a late season series. They were much better than that brutal team beginning of the season, and we've already, Dave Dombrowski was pretty upfront in saying, hey, we're going to add a starter via free agency, which I thought he was pretty open about that, and maybe doesn't do a whole lot for his bargaining power with David Price or Zach Greinke or whoever. They're going to be better. That's a pretty formidable duo of Uehara and Kimbrell in the back end of their bullpen. Yankees, now there's talk of them trading like Brett Gardner for a starter, and like Andrew Miller's name's been bandied about. I know it's always difficult, and it was expected to be difficult this year, maybe not as difficult in years previous, and it turned out to be that way. The Yankees and the Red Sox weren't all that great this year, but I think they're beefing up. And it's going to be an absolute dogfight in 2016.
We'll see. I mean, Kimbrel's a great ad. And I know that when I heard that the Red Sox had traded for him, I immediately thought, well, Jackie Bradley, or, you know, they're not going to trade Mookie Betts, but
yeah. They're
going to have to deal one of these young players off the big club. They didn't. So they'll be stronger, and the Yankees will probably be stronger too. But the Blue Jays are really, really good. I don't think that that's changing. We'll see. There's that little bit of fear that teams that win and then don't make major changes, but think everything's going to be okay, things tend not to be okay. But it's very hard for me to look at this Blue Jays offense and defense and think that there's going to be major regression.
Before I let you go, Mike, do you think it's going to be the same under Tony LaCava as it was under Alex Anthopoulos in this regard, in that when things went down, we only heard about them when they were done for the most part. Although the David Price thing We kind of heard about rumblings, and then it did happen. So maybe that's just more urban legend than actual reality. But we heard stuff about the Estrada deal, and maybe that was leaked by the agent to try and see if there was any other offers out there. Do you think it will still be cone of silence-y under Tony LaCava?
I don't know. I wonder. I think probably, but I don't know. I mean, we'd heard. You look at who's getting stuff. You know, who had Estrada first, that the Blue Jays were close to a two-year deal? Joel Sherman of the New York Post had that first. Did he get it from the agent, or did he get it from Mark Shapiro?
Mm-hmm.
Who are Shapiro's friends in the media? We don't know any of that stuff yet. So I think that that it's going to be a process, a feeling-out process. He's going to learn us. We're going to learn him. Nobody wants stuff to get out ever. But Alex was adamant with people, with anybody that he was dealing with, you know. So I really do wonder about that. It would be great if stuff started to leak out a little bit. Hopefully it leaks to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, it would be good. I don't anticipate like a faucet turning on or anything like that. But that's something that we'll have to wait and see.
Speaking of faucets, aren't you glad you don't have to deal with those scary fountains anymore?
Those fountains are scary.
Yeah, there were
8 of them.
Yeah. Hey, did you end up having P.F. Chang's while you were in Florida?
Nope.
Oh, okay. Good for you.
Did not. Went to a lovely place called Lemongrass on Wednesday night. Went to a beer garden on Tuesday. I tweeted the picture of the pretzel that we got there. No P.F. Chang's.
Mm.
So there was one on the way from our hotel to the meetings hotel. So yeah. We did pass it every day.
Yeah, we gave you the address of that one. All right.
Maybe I'll go to the one in Clearwater tomorrow night.
Wait, you're in Clearwater?
Blue Jays Fantasy Camp.
Okay, yeah, that's what you were tweeting about. What is that?
The Blue Jays are having a fantasy camp. There are 72 people who are going to go down and have like that major league experience. There are alumni who are coaching the teams. There are 12 alumni, including like Devon White and Roberto Alomar and Tanyan Sturts, and various others. And it's going to be a week of
Sturts.
Pseudo spring training.
Tanyan Sturts, former Yankee, former Tampa Bay Ray. Was he not the ace of that Rays staff at one point?
I think he was like 8-17 in the ace of that Rays staff. Yeah.
That's fun.
It's going to be a blast.
Wow.
I'm hosting and also participating.
So you're going to play. It's softball or what is it?
No, it's baseball.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That sounds dangerous, actually, kind of.
It should be fun. I'll probably spend a lot of time in the trainer's room, but hopefully the vast majority of the other 72 people are older, fatter, and less in shape than I am.
No comment.
I know that Barry Davis will be included in that group.
Hey, don't get a concussion because we know you can't afford to get too many more. How many? You've had like 50.
I think 11 now.
Okay, yeah. And anybody that's just learning that now probably explains a lot. But all right. Enjoy Florida. Wow. And then you're doing like pitch talks, or do you already do one?
No, and then the week after next, there'll be one. I'm doing one in London and one in Waterloo on the 23rd and the 25th, but I'm not sure which is which.
All right, well, enjoy, Michael, and say hello to the fantasy campers for me.